brought up from Pittsburgh. Let me give you Kathy Yates.
Hi, everyone. I'm an addict named Kathy. Oh, man. Oh, CPRCNA, you did it again. Yes, you did. This is gonna be a weekend that's gonna be one of those memories that we'll be sharing about for a long, long time. So I just really appreciate all your hard work and effort. I remember coming to this convention back in the early 90s. So I hail from the Pittsburgh area. And we used to, wait a minute now, shoot. That obviously means that Baltimore's in the house. I was sharing with somebody earlier, I said, this is the only place, Narcotics Anonymous, where Pittsburgh and Baltimore actually love each other. And then you go and boom it. So I remember back in the early 90s when we used to pile together in a van, a bunch of us, and we would drive 7 hours down here, excited every mile of the way to get down here. We would cram into a hotel room, 10, 12 of us, right? We didn't care. We're just excited to be here. And we would cram together, and we would come here, and we would come to meetings, and we'd buy CDs. We could do this whole convention for the weekend for less than $100. Nowhere else in this place could you possibly do a whole weekend convention for less than $100. And we would get bombarded with the message of recovery. And we would pile back into our van on Sunday, and we would drive 7 hours back home, sharing in that van everything that we heard and everybody that we saw. And I'm not even sure if that van ever really touched the ground. I think we may have actually floated home. And for a good month, we shared at every meeting we went to about how wonderful it was to be a part of this convention. So, I just want to say, on behalf of the Tri-State Region of Narcotics Anonymous, we would like to take this opportunity to say thank you, Chesapeake and Potomac, for giving us a wonderful, wonderful weekend of recovery. Thank you. So I want to share a little bit about how I got here, what happened, and what it's like today. I'm going to share my lane with the interpreter. Hey, Jimmy Jam, if you think the water was a problem, I'm afraid I'm going to assault this woman because I get very animated. So, let me help you. So, I'm going to do the best I can to try to help the newcomer today. And I'm going to do the best I can because I want you to be able to know that this is a process that gives freedom to us and that the steps are the way that we get free. When I first came to Narcotics Anonymous, I really couldn't understand the whole concept of the steps. And I used to think that if I could read them and that I could quote them and I could, like, I used to stand at the podium and I could do the steps without looking at the paper. And I thought, and I used to do it like a little kid would do the ABCs. You know what I mean? Now, I read the steps, you know, without looking at the paper, so I know them, so I must really be recovering, right? Because I was so proud to be a part of it. And so I believe that the steps are the way we get free. And when I was new, I wondered, well, what's going to happen to me if I do these steps? Like, how is it going to change me? And how is it going to get me to feel better about myself and be able to live and enjoy life and all these things that you promised? And so I'm going to take you through a journey through the steps of what happened to me. In the first step, we're going to the basement of this house. And there in the basement, in the dark, is where you'll find me in the first step. Sitting in the basement in the dark, alone and lost. I was infested with infection. I had abscesses all over me. I was so sick, I couldn't even get my hands over my head to brush my hair. I kept my hands in my pockets. I kept gloves on till May. I was so embarrassed that I'd sit in the back of the room and I would just listen to the message. And I would listen and I would listen and I would listen, and I wondered how you knew. Because down in that basement, I knew that there was no hope. And how did you know? How did you know I was slowly committing suicide? How did you know that? How did you know that I lived to use and used to live? How did you know that I was reduced to the animal level? How did you know those things? Where did you get those words? How did you identify with me to such degree of degradation and humiliation? And in the dark of the basement is where I finally come to terms with not being able to live like this anymore. I got arrested, and I was in a hospital room, and I was watching the 11 o'clock news. They didn't even take me in the jail. And I'm just straight up, I've been thrown out of a lot of places in active addiction. But the first step talks about there's a moment of clarity when you can't deny the truth anymore. And my moment of clarity came whenever I was arrested and I was taken to the county jail, and the county jail would not take me. Now, I had already been put out of methadone programs. They considered me to be an undesirable. But when I hit the county jail and the jail wouldn't take me, something clicked that there was something terribly wrong here. And they wouldn't take me because I was so much infection and I was wrapped in all this gauze and I had wounds that were seeping through it, and it smelled like death. And they took me to the hospital instead. And in that hospital room, I was watching the news, and I saw me for the first time, without any drugs in me, without the disease trying to tell me, you look good, you've lost weight. I saw me straight up, just the way I was, and it hit me, and I knew it. It hit me, and I heard a voice inside me that was barely a whisper, and it said, "You're dying. You're dying. We can't live like this anymore." And in that moment, I cried out. It wasn't a demand. It was a plea. God, please help me. And in the dark of the basement came a flicker of light. Came just a small enough flicker of light that I felt hope. And it came from you. I came to meetings, and I went to meetings, and I listened, and I shared, and I moved from the last to the back to the middle to the front. And I started understanding the readings and the literature and getting a sponsor. And I did, look, I didn't know how recovery worked. All I knew was how to use. That's all I knew. And you told me to chase my recovery like I chased the drugs. And so I just took everything I knew about using and I made it work in recovery. So you said get a sponsor, and I said that has to be like the dope man then. That has to be, you know what I'm saying? That has to be the go-to person. That's who I'm going to get me. I'm going to get me the best go-to person I can find. And you said get a home group. And I knew what a home group kind of was because I had a bar that I always hung out at. I had a spot that I would always be able to sling at. They knew me. I knew them. I used to wonder, how do the police always find me? Because I didn't move for 15 years. And they said, that's the place you go. That's a home group. That's where people can find you. That's where you go. That's where you set up, you clean up, you stand at the door. I know how to stand at the door. I'll be the door person that stands at the door. I got that job. That's mine. People, a lot of times we think we don't know nothing. We know something. Just flip it, baby, flip it. And I used to go to meetings and people be sharing about just for today and just for today and just don't use just for today. And I was so ill. I was so physically ill. And I remember saying to people in meetings, you know, just for today is like swell, but what do you do just for tonight? How do you get through those dark, quiet, lonely hours in the middle of the night when the clock gets loud and the thoughts start coming? And the racing in my head has so much traffic that there's whistles and horns and everything else going on in there, and I can't sleep. What do you do then? And I remember putting together a poem. You inspired me, and I remember putting together a poem, and I used to say it at night. And I would say, it was my way of like praying. I'd say, just for tonight, I'll be all right. In the quiet dark of the evening, my thoughts will not deceive me. I have a ship to weather the storm. With help from all, I will transform. I have faith in God above. I believe He's full of love. So hold on tight and don't lose sight. And just for tonight, I'll be all right. And I fell asleep. I would say it over and over and over again because if I said that, the other thoughts couldn't get in. And I kept saying it over and over and over again, and I fell asleep. And when I woke up the next morning, I remember thinking to myself, this shit works! Not, wait, I'm talking about the second step. Not does it just works for you. It doesn't just work for you. This shit's working for me. And then here comes the third step. Once the light's flickering, it's time to take the steps up out of the basement. Start to get an understanding of God. Start making a decision. Take a step. God is good all the time. Take a step. God didn't bring me this far to let me down. Take a step. God doesn't close one door without opening another. Take a step. If God is for me, who could be against me? Take a step. Just keep stepping. Just keep stepping. And then we're taking the steps up out of the basement, and we hit the door because we're on four. And we open up the door, and this house is dark. There's no lights on in this house. And all we're working with is a pen light, because it's through the pen we see the light. And I'm searching through the house, and I'm looking for me. Somehow, through the course of progression, I abandoned myself. Each time I compromised a value or moral for a hit or for the next one, I abandoned a piece of me until there was nothing left. That's why we come in here with fractured personalities and spiritually bankrupt. And so I'm searching for myself, and where I find is in the closet. When I was a little girl, I used to hide in the closet. I'm an only child from a broken home that they always said was spoiled rotten. And be careful of labels, because they make identities. And so as a little girl, I spent a lot of time alone. My mother worked in factories. She worked swing shifts. And most of the time that I wasn't alone, I was with babysitters. So I had some idea that people had to be paid to spend time with me. And when my mother was home, she was exhausted. So I would hide in the closet, and I would sit there under the blankets, and I would wait to see if anybody would look for me, to see if anybody missed me. Did anybody even notice I was gone? Did anybody really care? And the pain of that whole thing of not being noticed and nobody caring and nobody wanting you and nobody loving you just kept growing. And then by the time I go walking through the hall, there's the teenager. This child is running through the house, slamming doors and stomping up and down the steps. So angry that nobody is showing up, that nobody's living up to what they say they're supposed to do, that nobody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. And if they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, then I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do either. And the resentments start. And before I know it, I'm full of resentment, I'm full of pain, I'm full of bitterness, disappointment, I hate myself, and then I'll find the woman in the bathroom. I spent a decade in the bathroom. A decade in the bathroom, on the floor, desperately trying to get that next one in me some kind of way. Wanting to die in that bathroom. Could this just be the last one? God, if you have any mercy. please get me out of this torment in hell. And after I find all these pieces of me, here comes five. And when five comes, all the lights come on. Five is the power box. Five is the power box. Look, if you are in recovery and you have not done a fourth step, you are living in the dark. And here's the deal. Wait. You don't have to live like that clean. We do not have to settle for that clean. In five, all the lights are on. Look, I remember here in the fifth step, I'm finally going to admit that all this pain and suffering and misery is a direct result of me running from me. It's for me running from me, for not being there for me, for not looking out for me. All that stuff that I blamed for everybody else not being there, I'm the one that left me the most. Every dream I had, every aspiration, every bit of innocence, anything good about me, I sold it for a hit. I sold it for a hit trying to just survive. I remember getting busted by the feds one time, and they had me on videotape. This is how deep denial can be. And this is how important this fifth step is. To admit to ourselves, to God and another human being, the exact nature. The exact nature. Right? Because really, four's talking about what we do. Five's talking about why we do it. But six is going to tell us how. Six is going to tell us how. You want to figure this? Six is going to tell you how. And here in five, the feds bust me because I'm one of those, I'll take it to the grave. I am not going to admit shit. If you even ask me, I want to know why you're asking me. But I had a friend of mine who said, addicts don't communicate, we interrogate. Why you want to know? What's it to you? So the feds got me on videotape. They're taking me to court for, it's a possession with intent. They're trying to make it a distribution. It was just a bunch of addicts trying to get high. They made a fucking federal case out of it. And so they're showing the videotape, and they're showing, I used to think that I was an entrepreneur, and I used to sell drugs out my window like a Dairy Queen. I had a 2x4 propped up under the door, and I would only put my hand out the window because I thought they can't identify my hand. It didn't matter that it was my house. That's a technicality. And so they got me on a videotape. I guess I must have, like, peeked out the window or something. Somebody's money wasn't right. Hold up now. And they show in the video and they say, at the time, I was, I forget what name was I using then, shit. I think I was a Kathy Novak then. Miss Novak, is this you in this video? That is not me. I don't know who that is, but it's not me. You heard what I'm saying? I'm talking about even if you had me cold, I still was not going to admit it. I don't care if you saw me. Have you had your eyes checked lately? Here we go in the fifth step, though. We're coming clean with all this because in order to be able to show up for me, I have to admit that I haven't shown up for me. And then in the sixth step, once the lights are on, this place is filthy. There is garbage everywhere. We're talking about a major cleanup here. And I'm talking about garbage like greed and gluttony and pride and lust and envy. I'm talking about defects of character, things that interfere with our connection with God, things that keep us focused on worldly things instead of spiritual things. I'm talking about greed will show up and say, that shit's mine. It's mine. Don't tell them you got that. It's yours. Hide it. Hide it. Don't let them know how much money you got. Right? Hide it. It's mine, mine, mine. And for every defect there is, we have a weapon. And the weapons that we have are called slogans. We throw slogans around like they're no big deal, but they're weapons. They are spiritual weapons to be used whenever the Serenity Prayer talks about the wisdom to know the difference. It's talking about knowing what principle to use at what time in what situation. That's what it's talking about. Of course, this is just for me. It may not apply to you. I'm talking about me. And so greed says, it's mine, but we say, ah, no, 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 no. You can only keep what you have by giving it away. And gluttony shows up, and gluttony says, more, get more, do more, eat more. Have more. More, 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 more. And recovery says, no, 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 no. One is too many, and 1,000's never enough. And envy is very bitter. And envy says, sleep with his boyfriend. Get her job, right? Instead of getting my own, I want to take yours. It's the hater defect. And recovery says, no, 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 no. If you want what they have, then do what they did. See what I'm saying? And pride says never, ever, ever let them see you sweat. Don't tell them you're hurting because there's too many of these people in here that get joy out of your pain. So don't let them know. And recovery says, you cannot save your face and your ass at the same time. See, in the sixth step, we're just picking up the garbage and we're putting it in the bag. We're calling it what it is. We no longer have to live like we're surviving. We're learning to live and enjoy life. We're looking for freedom from being in fear all the time. And we're going to pick that garbage up and put it in the bag. And we also have one like, you know, these defects reduce us to the animal level clean. My experience is a defect of character reduces me to the animal level clean. I feel like I'm on the prowl. I am looking for a victim. Like lust. Lust reduces us to the animal level when we go on the prowl. Looking for someone vulnerable. I get reduced to a cat. And I prowl around and I rub up against people. And I purr. When really, I'm just an animal trying to sink my claws in you. And don't get it twisted, guys, because you get reduced to the dog. You walk around wagging your tail, looking for a companion, when all you really are is just a dog trying to bury a bone. And see, all that garbage has got to go in the bag. We don't want to live like that anymore. Put the garbage in the bag. And what happens in 7 is I become a garbage picker. Sometimes I put the garbage in the bag, but I say, well, hold up, wait a minute. Let me see, can I clean this one off a little bit? Maybe I can still get it to work some kind of way. And so I might pull lust out of there, and instead of being like a predator, I'll just be a flirter. I'll just flirt instead. And there finally comes a time in the 7th step where humility hits us. And we start to realize that we are given a purpose to be of service instead of looking to get served. And the garbage gotta go. And out goes the garbage, and the house is clean and things look fresh. But the 8th step comes into play. And we refuse to open the door. We don't want to open the windows. We don't want to let any light in. We just want the lights on the ceiling. But we don't want any let any fresh air or lights in because we're still scared. We're still feeling guilty and ashamed, and we don't want the outside world to see us. I'm afraid to open the mail. Oh, please don't send something certified. I will never pick it up. Or the phone will ring, and I'll answer the phone, but I won't speak. Because I'm waiting for the other voice to come through to see if it's somebody I'm willing to talk to. Or is it somebody trying to collect something I'm not willing to pay? Right? Or don't let somebody knock on the door. I'll be peeking out the blinds like I was smoking something else. I'm still living in guilt. I'm still living in shame. I still don't like myself. I've cleaned it up, but I don't like myself. And so what happens in 8 is I start to make a list of all these things that are causing me to feel guilt and shame. And what happens in 9, and here's one of the big things for me in 8. Now, I know, you know, we did many people great harm. But most of all, we harmed ourselves. And that came clear to me in 8 when I realized that I remember coming to Narcotics Anonymous, and I remember hearing you people say, check this out. You can become a responsible, productive member of society. Now, I came in here, I had a criminal record. I probably have, maybe like 15 felony convictions. It wasn't working for me, okay? It wasn't really bad luck. 15 felony convictions, abscesses all over me. I have never worked a job. The only way I got a GED was on a bar bet. It was a bar bet that I couldn't pass it, so I did, and that was for some drinks. It wasn't because I thought I needed a GED at the bar. So when you said you can become a responsible, productive member of society, I thought to myself, why? For what? What would I want to do that for? And I didn't understand that it offered me more freedom. It offered me the opportunity to open the door and the windows and to let the light shine in and to feel the sun on my face and to really experience another level of freedom. And one of the things was when I was little, I had dreams. And one of my dreams was to be a nurse. And I remember my oldest daughter, she went to school for nursing. And she got her nursing license, and she would periodically say to me, Mom, you should go to nursing school. And I would be like, yeah, right, who's going to hire a felon, nurse? They're going to really let me be a nurse. Yeah, right. Give me your narcotics keys, please. come on, Marcy, seriously, some of those dreams are just gone. They're like dead ends. And I remember my daughter saying to me, you talk all this good stuff about God and, all this stuff about faith and God's will and all that stuff. She says, but how do you know it isn't God's will if you don't try? How do you know it isn't God's will if you don't even try? And I said, ooh. And so I said, okay, fine, I'll try. Now, I was already working in the field of counseling because they love felons. Coming out the gate, you're a miracle. You got 5 years clean and 15 felonies, can you please work for me? So it was easy for me, and I loved doing it, but it wasn't my dream. It wasn't my dream. And I used to always wonder, I wonder if I could. I wonder if I would have been good at it. I wonder if I could have made it. Could I made the grade? Could I made the cut? And I used to wonder that. And so I said, okay, fine. I'm almost 50 years old, but okay, fine. Let's see if it's God's will. And if it isn't God's will, then when I look in the mirror at me and my reflection looks back, I can say to her, I believed enough in you to go after your dream. If God doesn't want us to have it, then it's because there's a higher purpose for me. But it isn't because I didn't believe enough in you. And so I started going to school, and I got into nursing school, and I went into the state and got my license for my nursing. And then I said, who the hell's going to hire a nurse with felony convictions? And I'm talking about the 9th step. Don't stop 5 minutes before the miracle happens. Don't do it. Don't do it. I don't care how scary it is, how disappointing it is. I don't care what storms, hurdles, whatever it is. Just keep putting one foot in front of the other. We will come out in the end. I'm telling you. So I go and I start applying for jobs. and I'm not getting any callbacks. And I said, oh, God, please don't have me go through all that to say psych. But I'm still on. If it isn't God's will for me, it isn't God's will for me. And all of a sudden, I get a call, and I go for the interview, and I get the job. I'm a psychiatric nurse. So I work in the community. I go in the community. I work with the severely mentally ill. Most of my patients are diagnosed with schizophrenia. And I go out in the community and I try to help them with their medications and try to help them live life so that they're not so scared, because they're so scared. And I try to get them to be okay so they can have a quality of life worth living. And because I'm a part of Narcotics Anonymous, I was taught this very, like, vital principle of empathy. And as a result, I can identify with anybody at any time, anywhere. And I don't judge like I used to because of it. And so I got one of the guys in the car with me, and we're riding in the car, and he's rocking. And I said, babe, what's up? And he says, I got thoughts. And I said, me too. And he said, yeah, but I got thoughts that tell me to use. Me too. He says, I think I should go to the hospital right now. And I said, I think we should go to a meeting right now. And the look on his face was astounding. He could not believe that I, the nurse, could identify with him in that much of a way. He couldn't believe it. And I do this all day long. I call them on the phone. I tell them, I'm coming over with your medication. We're going to be okay. Just hold on. I'm going to be there. Unfortunately, I got a guy that's called, his name is Thomas P. Right? And so I have in my phone all my numbers, my patient numbers, and all my NA numbers. And so I'll tend to, like, scroll through, and I'll just push the button, and I'll call. And I get the call, and the phone picks up, and I say, Thomas, where are you? I'm coming over to give you your shot. Don't move. And I called Thomas P. from Baltimore. And Thomas P. says to me, Kathy H., this is Thomas P. in Baltimore. And I may have a disorder, but you're not giving me no damn shot. And so now we get to 10, and the house is wide open, the doors, the windows, but we got to keep this place clean. We don't want to let this place get messed up like it did before. We don't want to make all this work be for nothing. So you got to pay attention. Check yourself before you wreck yourself, right? Don't let things get all messy and then get overwhelmed. Don't get backed into a corner that we can't get out of clean. And I tend to look at it like we're driving in recovery. We got to stay in our lane. And when I'm driving, I got to pay attention to the rearview mirror, the side mirrors, and what's in front of me. Right? I can't be all busy with, I'm going to dance and talk on the phone and text some here and blah, 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 because seriously, it's real easy. This disease is progressive, just like our recovery has, you know, it says progress, not perfection. Progress means constantly improving one's skills. That's the definition of it. constantly improving one's skills. That's why people with time tend to get held to a higher standard. And that's not to say that we don't fall short, but that we should be getting better. Better. Right? And so there's times in recovery where I get caught in obsession and compulsion. And look, I am a victim of my own good intentions. I could be doing the right thing and still make it wrong. Here's what happens. I'll get busy doing... there's an intersection in Pittsburgh where we come off of... we come off the parkway, and when you come off the parkway, there's always traffic backed up that's heading for a bridge. But there's another lane that's the left lane for people that are turning, and there's never any cars in that lane. Most of the time, I don't want to wait for the traffic lane. So I tend to go into the left lane, even though I'm not making the turn, and I go all the way up as far as I can go, and I wait, like the disease of addiction. I'm waiting. Here's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for you, while you're in that traffic line, to not be paying attention. Because when you're not, it don't matter what you're doing. I don't care if you're talking to your sponsor on the phone. I don't care if you're dancing to a song on the radio. I don't care what it is that you're doing. I'm just waiting for you not to be in the moment. Because when you are not in that moment and you give me enough room, I am going to cut you off. And don't hate me for it either. Don't hate me for it, because you're the one that wasn't paying attention. And so I call my sponsor on the phone, and I'm talking to my sponsor about what I do. Now, I'm a firm believer in service work. I do service. I got 24 years clean, and I still do service work. It keeps me in the middle of my recovery. So I'm talking to my sponsor, and she says, oh, hey, what's going on? And I says, well, my home group needed a new meeting place, so I worked on that. But now they need a GSR, so I volunteered to do that. They voted me in. I got an H&I commitment that I'm the panel coordinator for, because it's the CCC center that I was released to when I got out of jail, and I got to help those girls, right? They asked me to do the vice chair of the convention, so now I'm the vice chair of the convention. But we don't have a programming chair, so I'm doing programming, too, because I'm responsible for that. You know, the SSP and the USSC and all that stuff's going on with the service system structure. I need to get involved in that, too, of course. And before I know it, my sponsor says to me, hold up, wait a minute. How many service commitments meetings are you going to a month? And so I know these questions are loaded. These are the times we pause. She says, I have a question for you. Are you doing recovery-based service or service-based recovery? I'm holding the phone thinking to myself, does she know who she's talking to? This is Kathy H. from Pittsburgh. The good Sharon, convention going, service making, recovering addict. Do I need to identify myself again to her? Because she's obviously got me confused with some other sponsee that don't do shit, right? And she says to me, I'm just saying, I got 30 years clean, I make 3 meetings a week, and that I make more meetings a month than I do attend service commitment meetings. And if you don't, then you need to check yourself. So I'm like, shit. because I go to a lot of service meetings. So I start counting all the service meetings and trying to figure out blah, 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 blah. And it dawns on me, I need to go to more meetings. I need to go to more meetings. So I start going to meetings, and what I find out is I'm the merchandise chair of the convention. By the way, the Start to Live convention happens to be this year, November 21st through 24th at Seven Springs. We would love to have you. I feel like I did an infomercial, right? But I'm the merchandise chair. I can go to meetings. I can announce the convention and tell them I have merchandise for sale after the meeting if anybody wants to get with me. My sponsor's a genius. She's a genius. And so going to meetings again has got me all pumped up, and I'm all excited about recovery again, because you've got to be careful. You can be like so busy. I get so busy doing this. The disease is over here, over here. And I'm over here. And I get busy looking over here and doing all these good things. And then the disease moves like an inch. And I look back and I'll be like, all right. Because I don't think it moved, because it only moved an inch. And then I look over there again, and here comes another inch. And then I look again, and then there's another inch. And then before I know it, it's up on top of me like the interpreter. And I'll be like, how'd you get there? And then here comes the 11th step. In the 11th step, we find out that all that garbage was taking up the place that was really God's space. All that garbage was just in the way of God. 2008, my father passed away. This was one of those things where... You know, in the beginning of recovery, they say, do you think there's anything that might happen in your life that you're not sure that you can get through? Do you have anything? They've called it a reservation. Is there anything you think? And my father's death was it. Because I was definitely daddy's girl. That was my rock. That was the most unconditionally loving experiences I have ever had with another human being. It didn't matter how wrong I was, how bad I was, how many times I did it again and again and again, he would always show up for me. And my father passed away in 2008, and I felt my heart break. I felt my heart break. And for years, I struggled every day just putting one foot in front of the other. And my biggest fear wasn't so much using as it was, my fear was that I didn't have enough endurance to tolerate the pain without losing hope. That was my fear. Could I make it through? Did I have enough recovery, enough endurance, because I knew it was gonna be rough. And there were many times when we were coming down here from Pittsburgh, we went through some weather changes that were really strange, and I thought to myself, it's so much like what I went through with my father's death. There were times that we came down here where there were torrential rains. I mean, just torrential rains, and it just seemed like it wasn't gonna stop. And then it would clear for a moment, and then we would run into this fog where you could barely see like even 50 feet in front of you. And then that would clear, and then here it would come again. And it just felt like it was never, ever going to end. And I remember a woman saying one time, because I'd be calling out to God, but I was having trouble hearing him. And I remember a woman sharing when I had about 10 years clean. And she was sharing about how she was talking to her sponsor. And she said, "Sponsor, I'm praying and I'm praying and I'm praying and I'm listening for God to give me guidance and direction." She said, "But how do you know the difference between the disease's voice and God's voice? How can you tell the difference? Like, how do I know the disease isn't playing tricks on me?" And her sponsor said to her, "When you called me on the phone and I answered the phone, how did you know it was me?" She said, "I know it was you because I know your voice." She said, "How do you know you're my voice?" She says, "Because I call you all the time." She said, "Well, then maybe if you called God all the time, you'd know God's voice too." And then here comes the 12th step, and it's open house. And I invite you in, and I share my experiences, and I let you know that we do recover, that we can get through anything, that we are guided by a code of principles that makes anything possible for us, that there's truly freedom at the end of the road, that an addict never has to use again. Never has to use again. It's truly the experience of intimacy, because it's into me see. And that doesn't even stop there, because just like there's freedom for the steps for the person, there's freedom with the group too. And the first tradition talks about, really, look for the similarities, not the differences. The second tradition says, learn to listen, listen to learn. The third tradition says, those that judge don't matter, and those that matter don't judge. The fourth tradition talks about autonomy. I got too many groups in my area. We have over 600 meetings a month. And meetings are popping up out of convenience, not commitment. Because people would rather have a meeting in their backyard instead of supporting a group that's struggling three fucking blocks away. Honesty without compassion is hostility. Fifth tradition, carry the message, not the mess. Sixth tradition, keep the focus. Seventh tradition, if we don't stand for something, we'll fall for anything. Eighth tradition, if we don't get humble, we'll crumble. Ninth tradition, serve to live and live to serve. 10th tradition, I'm here by God's grace and mercy, and I ain't with no controversy. 11th tradition, don't talk the talk, walk the walk. And the 12th tradition talks about anonymity, and we always think that anonymity is about protecting us from them. It's not. It's about protecting us from us. It's bearing no name because we know where this message comes from. This is a God-given program with God-sent people. And I hope you remember every day to thank God. So I just want to close with a poem. I had a... Dot T used to be my grand sponsor before she passed away. She used to close with poems and tell stories all the time. And they were inspiring, and they gave me hope, and that's the way it is. The predecessors took despair and gave us little lights that gave us hope, and we moved, just like the logo talks about. We moved, and despair turns into hope. And she used to tell a poem about building bridges, like Ron was talking about at the meeting yesterday, and how important it is for us to build bridges. Said in... An old man traveling a lone highway came in the evening cold and gray to a valley deep and wide through which was flowing a rippling tide. The old man crossed in the twilight dim. That rippling stream held no fear for him. And he turned when he reached the other side to build a bridge to span the tide. "Old man," cried a cynical voice from near, "you're wasting your time building here. Your journey's over. It's the end of the day. Why build a bridge to span the way?" The man raised up his old gray head. Good friend, this road I've traveled, he said. There followeth after me today a newcomer whose feet must pass this way. And this road that was difficult for me, for that newcomer may a pitfall be. They too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I'm building this bridge for him. I'm an addict named Kathy.